The Red Eye Radio podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America and around the world, 866-90-RED-EYE. He's Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara. Thank you for being here.
Thank you very much.
Wow. 56 years ago, Kennedy assassinated. Wow. 56 years ago.
Wow.
This boomer remembers where he was.
Hmm. My mom remembers the day I wasn't born yet, but my mom remembers the day, she recalls it. My dad, she said, came home early. Was very, very upset. I mean, they both were on that day.
You know, when I look back at it, I was home. I don't exactly remember why, but I was home, and I think my brother and sister were also sick. We were all sick that day, and I was in elementary school. I would have been, you know, just, what, 7, maybe?
Hmm.
And and whatever we were watching on TV, because we were watching TV, and it came on, you know, and it was Walter Cronkite.
Hmm.
And immediately when he came on and, you know, and said, you know, the shooting, Kenny's been assassinated, the phone rang right then. I remember my mom going out, and it was one of my relatives. And you look back. It is an event if you lived in that time as a child. Hmm. When I moved to Dallas, when I moved here in 2000, I'd lived in East Texas in the 1980s, but I had never, and I'd been to Dallas, but I never took the tour. But it went on my interview, Bob Schomper. It's like, can you take me past the grassy knoll? And I'd never been there, so I mean, I was an adult, and you know, we came at it from the other end, not from downtown, but from outside downtown in,
right?
And
right.
Came around, and all of a sudden, you go onto the viaduct, and there it is.
Yeah,
and
I mean, you've seen it because of the Zapruder film and countless documentaries and movies and everything else. Yeah.
And so when I saw it, which would have been in 2000, you know, you're at that point you were talking a little over, you know, less than 40 years, but still, it's something that sticks in your mind. And then the first time that I went, you know, through the whole memorial, the whole Kennedy Center there, and you know, went up and saw everything, and you sit down, and you know, they show you the film of that day,
mm-hmm.
and it's fascinating because I'm an adult, and you know, come on, at that point you've processed everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've processed everything in your life, and you know, in your own personal life, you've had death, you've had injuries. I mean, you've all of us have gone through personal tragedies. I had two of my best friends, I mean, as close as you can get, who died at a very young age, and so you've been through all those types of tragedies and everything else that happens in your life. And your relatives at that time, by the time I got to 2000, my grandparents at that point were all dead, and so you know, you've gone through those different things.
Right, right.
And they're playing it, and, you know, John's salute.
Mm.
And I remember that. I remember that on TV. The emotion it brings up is just, you don't understand why. You're like, why am I, you know, why does this impact me and hit me so hard? And it was funny because the first time I was there, another relative was with me, and they were doing the same thing. And we talked about it. You know, what is it? We've become adults. We've processed it. Somehow living that day as a child and then coming to that point, it was almost – and then after that point, I've been to it many times before. But if I go in that little room where they show the film and the little salute, even if I've seen it on TV, I get emotional.
Yeah.
And it really – it to me, it is it's a very interesting sociological question. Why was, you know, as a kid, not even as an adult at that time, as an adult, you can understand, you know, you're an adult, you're in the middle of the Cold War. A president is assassinated, a very popular president who was also disliked, not liked in many areas of the country. Mm-hmm. And so, but was it the loss of innocence, as they say? Look, I know, and I've always called it BS, the whole, you know, media narrative of Camelot, which I never bought into even as a kid, because my parents made sure I understood that we're not Great Britain. We don't have royalty. You know, you understood where we, you know, where we came from. So I never bought into that, but maybe it was just the first thing where you, and then that happened. And then you had, you know, a few years later, you had Martin Luther King, and then you had Bobby Kennedy. And those are all things. I mean, that's really my childhood into teenage years. All those things happened on a national level, which does, I think, disrupt the psyche of a society when you have that happen,
right?
Because
you
had all that happen in what, five, six years,
right?
And so I've always found it. I mean, I go by that site. I don't like to see the marketing of everything that goes on there. I do believe it.
Yeah.
You know, to me that is to me that is the assassination site. It's strange because most assassination sites, you don't have that feeling. I grew up in Buffalo, New York, where McKinley was killed. There may be a marker somewhere where McKinley was assassinated in Buffalo. I don't know where it is. You know, you sit there and go, oh, they're going to put him on where this is where he was, you know. But for some reason, for Kennedy, it is.
Yeah.
It is a memorial. It is in a way a national shrine.
Yeah.
And it's weird because now I go by it all the time, but still every time I go by, you're just everybody's, when they know people are in the car with me, you just sort of look.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, and there are, I don't know, countless times that I've driven past it. I've driven that route. And every day, I mean, it's traffic. It's traffic in downtown Dallas.
Yeah.
And it never escapes me, the idea, and it's just, I don't know if I'm alone on this, but it seems kind of odd to have, you know, something as mundane as, you know, morning or afternoon traffic in that area. on that same route.
I know, yeah.
I mean, it seems odd.
Yes.
And because we've all, you know, I wasn't born yet, but we've all seen the Zapruder film. We've seen, I mean, the tragedy play out again and again and again in countless documentaries. And it's tragic. I mean, it's the kind of tragedy for a nation that is just, I can't imagine how sobering and sad it was. I mean, again, my mom has told me, I don't know how many times, you know, that day and my dad coming home early when that happened.
And I really wonder what it was like for, you know, my parents' generation. And you think of it, look, shocking things happen.
Yeah.
Remember, this is the generation that came out of World War II. This is a generation that came out of World War II, the atomic bomb. You know, you're talking about things that would shock people. Understanding when the Holocaust, you know, the full understanding of the Holocaust after World War II, that your parents, you know, went through. And then, then we had Korea, then the Cold War,
right?
In the midst of the Cold War. And so this wasn't a weak or wimpy society. But whatsoever. I mean, it probably, when you look at the society at that time, coming out of World War II and the sacrifice that was made by it and how this nation prepared for it, and then Korea, and then when the Cold War came, this was a nation that was evolving in a number of ways, but it was an extremely tough nation. And I just wonder, as an adult, was it because you came out of World War II and the Korean War, but then you had this great, as we know, the population boom, aha, That's why we're okay boomers. But then that happened, and then the economy and the middle class really started growing like never before. In that, if you look, you know, pre World War II, as to what happened post World War II, and that boom of the economic engine. Even though we did have, you know, the enemies there, there was a feeling of incredible success, and you know, we're powerful. We're good. We're moral. We're evolving every day to be a better nation. I think most people would have thought at that particular time.
Sure.
And it's almost as if when Kennedy was assassinated, that feeling of the past decade of the great advancements was somehow pushed back. Because as a kid, I understand. I saw it as a kid, and the reaction was just monumental. Look, it was the same thing as when the Apollo, when the capsule blew up on the, you know, at Cape Kennedy.
Yeah, yeah.
That was, that's something that's extremely emotional. We were watching TV. I think it was I Dream of Jeannie was on. And all of a sudden they broke into it.
Yeah.
That was extremely sad.
Yeah.
When that happened. Now, things as a kid will stick with you at that particular moment, but it was a big point in American history.
A very extremely big point in American history.
Not as big as the Kennedy assassination, but it was still, you know, it was huge. It was one of the top probably five moments. You think of the Kennedy assassination, that Cuban Missile Crisis, Bobby Kennedy, Martin Luther King, the Apollo fire.
Yeah.
So, but I just thought, you know, we, you know, we're here in Dallas and they talk about it. You know, it's there's always a lot of talk about it each and every year, each and every anniversary. But here we are again, you know. And I know it's funny because at times it'll be talked about in the media, you know, is there still guilt? I'm like, why would there be any guilt? I've always thought that was stupid when people talk
guilt
about
guilt on the part of a town.
Of a town, yeah. You had nothing to do with it.
Well, yeah.
It's ridiculous. It's Dallas is the place that killed Kennedy. No.
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 No. To me, that's always been dumb. And anybody who feels any guilt on what had happened in our town. Duh.
Yeah.
Timothy McVeigh lived about 6 miles from me when he committed the terrorist act.
Mm-hmm.
Had no reflection on me.
Right.
Right. I mean, that's, you know, and so I've always thought that was just.
Yeah, that is
just dumb.
That is, it is. It's odd. It's odd.
So there we are. So I just wanted to mention it very quickly on the boomer stuff, since Deep Voice Guy said, okay, boomer.
Right. Yeah.
Before the top of the hour.
Right.
Beware millennials, thanks to the Age Discrimination in Employment Act of 1967. If you say okay boomer to somebody at work, you can get fired.
Oh.
Because of
age
discrimination. Anybody over the age of 40, we have our special rights.
Yes, we do.
The Age Discrimination in Employment Act prohibits discrimination against anybody 40 or over. And I'm a victim, so if you say that to me, I'm going to sue you. Using the phrase could be considered to create a hostile work environment, according to Inc.com, which constitutes behavior that violates the law, such as age, race, or sex discrimination. So there you go. And the other thing is, students at University of Oklahoma are working to remove the school's Boomer and Sooner nicknames out of concerns that the words are offensive to Native Americans.
Mm. Hey, can I also say that it's a hostile workplace if they don't keep laxatives and antacids on hand? That's age discrimination.
Ah.
Huh?
Yeah.
And reading glasses.
Well, the thing is, the okay boomer was disarmed very quickly because everybody I know that was a boomer was using it all the time, calling each other a boomer. What we had to remind those in Generation Z, not that we stereotype, but we did grow up in the generation of sticks and stones, but names will never hurt me. So
so
we sort of embraced it. which sort of, you know, takes away the power of the insult.
Yeah, right.
All right, 866-90-RED-EYE.
Analyzing the oil in your vehicle is like sending your blood to the lab for tests. After you have submitted your lube scan kit, technicians will check for elemental metals, including the presence of metals and other elements such as aluminum, chromium, iron, lead, copper, calcium, and more. Knowing the levels of these materials can help you identify wear patterns in a specific part of your engine. High amounts of wear metal usually indicate an abnormal wear or corrosion problem. Technicians will also check for insoluble matter like carbon, fuel, and dirt. The insolubles test measures how fast the oil is oxidizing and receiving contaminants and how effectively the system's oil filtration is functioning. Analysis will measure the oil's viscosity, its alkalinity or acid level, and if the proper level of detergents and anti-wear additives are present. If your oil falls out of the range it's supposed to be in, the oil could have been overheated or contaminated. The lube scan report will detail the results of these tests and provide an overall condition of the sample, ranging from normal to severe. If you've used lube scan before, the report will include any changes from earlier analysis. For more information, visit Cenix.com.
This maintenance tip is brought to you by TA Truck Service. More bays, more expertise, more solutions.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Coming up following the bottom of the hour, we will hear from Devin Nunes, part of his closing statement. We heard from Adam Schiff earlier, and the reason we wanted to play Adam Schiff was because at the end of it, where he stated that we're going to have to look into our conscience and our constituents. And we're like, oh, so you don't believe you have this incredible evidence that exists out there, otherwise you'd be saying, I'm going to impeach the president.
Yeah, he forgot the other C that he needs to review, confidence.
Yeah.
Because it seems like he doesn't have it.
Also coming up, Lindsey Graham launches a probe of the Bidens. What's the latest on that? And the bombshell. The bombshell about the FBI employee who altered a document concerning the FISA warrant for Carter Page. It's the first leak in the Inspector General's report that's supposed to come out here on December 9th. We'll have the latest on that, plus your calls and comments. A couple other things real quick here that we want to make sure we get in, because this is really important. The California law that sought to require candidates to publish tax records in order to appear on the ballot has been ruled unconstitutional. It was by the federal judge. It's also been ruled unconstitutional by a state, by the state Supreme Court of California said it was unconstitutional by the state constitution.
Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah.
All right. Well, good. Good for California.
It got hit by California and the federal government.
Good. Yeah. I mean, you know, this is, again, what's ridiculous. They were willing to go change how many laws for one guy?
So the California Supreme Court unanimously struck down the law, saying it's a direct violation of the state constitution, which mandates the state government to operate, quote, an open presidential primary whereby the candidates on the ballot are those found by the Secretary of State to be recognized candidates throughout the nation or throughout California, end of quote. And that's it.
Wow.
What they're saying is the California constitution says no. You as lawmakers, unless you change the Constitution dictates that you have to do that you have to do it the way that the federal government dictates it.
Exactly. And, of course, they're not going to go through that. They're not going to change the state constitution.
No.
Not going to happen.
That's just crazy.
Happy Holidays. Red Eye Radio.
Hey, it's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. All right, we played Adam part of Adam Schiff's closing speech yesterday. So here's Devin Nunes and his closing speech after this week's impeachment inquiry public hearings, which really didn't help the Democrats. But here's Devin Nunes.
I have stressed in these hearings that the whistleblower complaint was merely a pretext for Donald Trump's political opponents to do what they've been trying to do since he was elected, oust the president from office. A brief timeline will illustrate the wide range of extraordinary attacks his administration has faced. I'm going to start in June of 2016, when Donald Trump was just a candidate. On behalf of the Democratic National Committee and the Hillary Clinton campaign, Fusion GPS hires Christopher Steele to write the Steele dossiers, a collection of false allegations attributed to Russian sources claiming that Donald Trump is a Russian agent. Fast forward to January 6th of 2017. FBI Director James Comey briefs President-elect Trump on the Steele dossier. The briefing is leaked to CNN, and soon afterwards, BuzzFeed publishes the dossiers. January 20th, on President Trump's inauguration day, the Washington Post runs a story headlined, quote, "The campaign to impeach Donald Trump has begun." January 30th, 10 days later, the whistleblower's current lawyer tweets, hashtag coup has started. First of many steps, hashtag rebellion, hashtag impeachment will follow immediately. March 22nd, Democrats on this committee falsely declare on national TV that they have more than circumstantial evidence that the Trump campaign colluded with Russia. July 12th, an article of impeachment is filed against President Trump in the House of Representatives. November 15th, Democrats file additional articles of impeachment against President Trump. As you see, this was just in President Trump's first year in office. He was subjected to a coordinated smear operation designed to falsely portray him as a Russian agent, as well as attempts to impeach him. This all occurred before his now infamous call with President Zelensky. In 2018, the attacks continued, often from executive branch officials charged with implementing his policies. On February 2nd, 2018, Intelligence Committee Republicans release a memo revealing that the FBI used fabrications of the Steele dossier to get a warrant to spy on a Trump campaign associate. September 5th, the New York Times prints a column by an anonymous Trump administration official who explains that he and other senior officials are, quote, working diligently from within to frustrate parts of Trump's agenda, unquote. December 7th, James Comey admits to Congress the Steele dossier was unverified before and after the FBI used it to get a warrant to spy on a Trump campaign associate. The Russia hoax continued to be the main focus of attacks going into 2019. But when that entire operation collapsed, a new impeachment pretext had to be found. May 4th, 2019, on national television, a Democratic congressman proclaims, quote, "I'm concerned that if we don't impeach this president, he will get reelected," unquote. July 24th of this year, Special Counsel Robert Mueller testifies to Congress about his report, which debunked the conspiracy theory that the Trump campaign associates conspired with Russia to hack the 2016 elections.
By the way, I just want to break in for 1 second. Thank goodness he said that. And he has said that quite frequently. We've always said that from the very, very beginning, that people have to understand where this started. We do at times have tunnel vision, and we forget every we look at the news of today and forget about how it might have been influenced a week ago or a month ago or 6 months ago or a year ago. And if you listen to the show, we've always said, remember what the initial charge was. When we walked in here, from Chris's vacation on January 2nd, 2017, and I looked at you and said, where in the world did this come from that Trump, did Trump collude with the Russians to hack the election? It all came from the dossier, as we found out then at that point, because that's when they were attempting to get that through and leak that through, and were succeeding in getting it leaked and parts of it leaked. So that question came out from middle of 2017 to the fall of 2019. Three different polls were published that showed that the majority, and we're talking over 60% in every poll of Democrats, 60% of Democrats that were polled believed that the Russians actually hacked into the election machines.
Yeah.
There's never been one story printed, but it's important to understand that that narrative is what they were asking for that six-month period up to the summer of 2017. So I just wanted to break for a moment and say that, because it's so critically important to understand how this whole thing started.
Yes. You know, it's, I think, again, the one thing that we've been repeating for a few years, and this goes back to what we have heard from listeners over and over again, the complaint that, well, nothing's ever going to be done, or how long is it going to take, you know, for the truth to actually come out. We started, you know, by following along with the work that journalists, investigative journalists, were doing, and then we had a ton of questions of our own about this process, about where it began and why it happened. And you look at where we are now, you look at where this, you know, this situation is going, and there is a great deal of hope that, again, if they can prove wrongdoing, that people will pay the price for it. We're getting very close. We already have the IG report coming out and everything else in December. And then beyond that, the word is that Durham is putting together, again, if he's got a grand jury ready to go, that means he's found some items. We don't know what it is. But the fact of the matter is, the truth can't hide. It can't hide forever. It may take too long for you. You may not be patient enough for it. But if you wait, if you do have the patience, the truth will definitely come out.
Here's more of Devin Nunes yesterday.
July 25th, just the very next day, a new anti-Trump operation begins as someone listens to the president's phone call with Ukrainian President Zelensky and leaks the contents to the so-called whistleblower. September 13th, Democrats on this committee take the extraordinary step of issuing a press release related to the whistleblower's complaint. October 2nd, it's revealed that Democratic staff on this committee had contact with the whistleblower before he submitted his complaint to the Inspector General, contradicting Democrat denials that such contact had occurred. October 31st, Halloween, probably the most appropriate day. Democrats in the House of Representatives vote to open an official impeachment inquiry against President Trump. What you've seen in this room over the past 2 weeks is a show trial. The planned result of 3 years of political operations and dirty tricks. Campaigns waged against this president. And like any good show trial, the verdict was decided before the trial ever began. After all, after denouncing the president for years as a Russian agent and a threat to democracy, how could the Democrats not impeach him? If they don't have to move, if they don't move to overthrow him, it would indicate that they don't really believe their own dire warnings about the threat he poses. The Democrats only needed a pretext. When their Russian dossiers and investigations failed to do the job, they moved to Plan B, the Ukraine hoax. This spectacle, with its secret depositions and mid-hearing press conferences, is not meant to discover the facts. It was designed to produce a specific storyline to be pushed forward by the Democrats and their supporters in the media. Ladies and gentlemen, as we approach Thanksgiving, Speaker Pelosi has just made clear, just today, USMCA, free trade deal with Canada and Mexico, that will boost our economy, won't be signed this year. So I hope Mr. Schiff will clarify how much longer we will waste on this effort and what other vital legislation he's willing to sacrifice for this impeachment crusade. Will there be even more secret depositions accompanied by the usual flood of Democratic leaks? Will we have more public hearings with Democrat witnesses, but not ours? Minority are in the dark about what this committee will be doing when we return. And so is America.
There you go, Devin Nunes, yesterday.
You know, it's and really that's what it spells out. And I think there's probably something in the internal polls that they're doing, the Republicans are doing, that shows that those independents are like, okay, why are we wasting so much time on this? What he just pointed out, the legislation, USMCA not getting done this year, and all of that. We've heard that in the chatter over the last few days, that the Democrats are wasting the time here. And I can almost guarantee you they're getting that feedback in the internal polls they're doing, that independents are looking at this going, what are they doing? Why are they wasting time on this and not working on whatever it is? Now, look. When they're not creating new legislation, that's a good day. But it's tragic when they continue this entire sham based on their hatred for one guy and their disbelief that he's the president and that he won, and their clear determination to make people feel like he's not actually the president. That's tragic.
Well, some of the response that we got yesterday, I'm reading here this from Fox. Democrats could draft 4 articles of impeachment. GOP plans for a full Senate trial, sources say. Not surprised, because I think the Senate, the Republicans in the Senate, the Republicans are saying, go ahead, do impeachment. And then we're going to drag this thing out all the way through next year. For a full Senate trial, not 2 weeks. We can drag this thing on for months. We can subpoena everybody here. We can keep your major candidates from actually campaigning, and we can keep this trial going month after month after month. And then we get to run it, and we're going to call the Bidens. We get to call who we wish to call. We're going to call the Bidens. We're going to call the whistleblower. We're going to get the whistleblower to testify. We'll go to court to do it. That's probably what they're waiting to do, because you and I've always asking why they're still calling him the whistleblower. Not time to have that fight yet. Don't have that fight when Democrats are in control of the entire process.
Right.
You completely control how you cover the how you get the whistleblower to testify. You go to court. You do whatever you have to do. You subpoena, as we have said before, Adam Schiff. Because of his known lies already and of him being a factual witness and lying about the whistleblower contacting his office, he's a factual witness in this entire case. He must be called. I think you can make a case, and if he attempts to fight the subpoena, I can see it finding a judge or the Supreme Court that says, sorry, you are a factual witness, you got to testify. And so I think that's what they're doing to the Democrats. And so we started hearing yesterday. Yeah. I started hearing yesterday, well, the Democrats might not impeach him. They might just censure him.
Yeah. Yeah. We knew it was weakening.
Not censor now.
Right.
Censure.
Yeah. Yes.
As it, we're afraid, because we heard one caller, we had to clarify it. He said, thank you so much for clarifying. He had to look up the word, because we said, you know, a lot of Democrats would say, but you censured him. How come he's still on Twitter?
Well,
that's censor.
It's funny, because the caller then said, well, once I Googled it and learned the meaning of it, I asked myself, well, wait a minute. Isn't that what they have been doing all along, if you know what the meaning of censure is? I mean, they have been. And so it's time. It really is time for this to end, And the Democrats know it because the people of America are telling them that.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Well, with the completion of at least this 5 days that we have had, finishing up yesterday of the impeachment inquiry public hearing, it'll be interesting to see, along with the IG report leak that has come out and the fact that Lindsey Graham is apparently starting the investigation of the Bidens, what will the president be tweeting today?
That's a good question.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
Across America, all around the world, RedEyeRadioShow.com, where we stream live. Good morning. Welcome. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. In the news today...
But is there a better example of the tyranny of majority than the way this impeachment process has been run in the House of Representatives? A process that is grossly unfair can only stem from a cynical majority that is willing to break long-established precedents, trample on legitimate minority concerns, and impose their absolute will on this body through sheer force of numbers.
That's Devin Nunes yesterday in his closing remarks as the fifth day of testimony in the public portion of the impeachment inquiry concluded. We'll get to where we think they may be going, or give you some of the options of where they may be going in just a couple of moments. But it is Bombshell Friday.
Bombshell Friday.
So we actually have bombshells. Justice Department Inspector General Michael Horowitz has found evidence that an FBI lawyer manipulated a key investigative document relating to the FBI secretive surveillance of a former Trump campaign advisor enough to change the meaning of the document, according to multiple reports. Now, that's really interesting because, you know, we've talked about that the initial story came from CNN. I'm reading from Fox. Washington Post has had a story saying that the changes that were made did not affect the truth or integrity of the FISA application process. And so we're still confused as to where that goes, but we'll just read you the story and see what happens on December 9th when this IG report comes out. The new evidence concerning the altered document is expected to be outlined in Horowitz's upcoming report. CNN first reported the news, which was largely confirmed by the Washington Post. Republicans have long argued that the FBI's alleged FISA abuses, which came as the Bureau aggressively pursued ultimately unsubstantiated claims of criminal links between the Trump team and Russia during the 2016 presidential campaign, were politically motivated. So that's what we have there, and we'll see what we get on December 9th. That was the breaking news overnight. Will be interesting to see how the president responds to that when he wakes up, what the tweets will be like. Other news, Senate Judiciary Committee Chairman Lindsey Graham sent a letter to the Secretary of State Mike Pompeo on Thursday requesting documents related to former Vice President Joe Biden and his communications with Ukrainian officials, a step seen as a GOP effort to counter the House impeachment investigation of President Trump. That comes directly from the Washington Post, just so you know. So headline is Graham launches probe of Biden's Burisma and the Ukraine. We also told you the Washington Examiner article, which was looking into a firm that was associated with Hunter Biden that got $130 million in federal guaranteed loans while Joe was vice president. So that's also something that the Republicans are going to jump on. And I guess from that jumping point, we can go right to where we're going to go with impeachment now. And where it goes is you could still have, when they come back from Thanksgiving, you could still have the Democrats come back and say, okay, we still want more witnesses. So the Democrats in the House Intelligence Committee could still bring in more witnesses. They could have them behind closed doors. They could have more public hearings, again, more public testimony. Or they could take what they have and give it to the Judiciary Committee under Gerald Nadler. It all eventually ends in Nadler's lap anyway. And then they could do a few things. They could sit there and look at it and write up articles of impeachment. The Judiciary Committee could look at it and say, well, we don't have enough here. We're going to call witnesses of our own. And then they could just drop it. They could, as this is the first time this came up, well, maybe an option to impeaching the president would be censuring the president.
Yes.
He'd be censured by the Democrats. He'd be censured by the House.
Mm-hmm.
And it would end there. And it would just be censured. And we had people that were listening today that had to look it up because we had to tell them, no, that doesn't mean he can't tweet anymore. That would be censoring, not censured.
So. That's right.
So
they're not going to keep him from talking. In fact, no one will keep him from talking.
That might be the most effective weapon if they could do that. You know, it was really interesting yesterday. The source stories going out there, which look, they're being planted on purpose. I don't think the Republicans know where they're going to go yet. Where the Republicans are going to go depends on what the Democrats try to do. If they censure the president, it's like, okay, and then you move on, and would the left be happy with that? You would have the Republicans say, see, you didn't have it to begin with, you made it all up. The other thing is that you've got Republicans stating that, well, okay, it could be a short trial, or it could go 4 months. This also from Fox. Democrats could draft four articles of impeachment. The GOP plans for a full Senate trial, sources say. At a meeting with top GOP senators and Trump administration officials at the White House on Thursday afternoon, Fox News is told there was a consensus that should Trump be impeached by the House, the GOP-controlled Senate should hold a trial rather than tabling the issue. Reports have surfaced that Republicans are considering even holding a long trial to disrupt the 2020 presidential primaries. And you can't blame the Republicans for that, can you? You guys started it. Several Democrats seeking to unseat Trump, including Kamala Harris, Amy Klobuchar, Elizabeth Warren, and Bernie Sanders, are senators who would need to divert at least some of their campaigning time towards a potential trial. I think most everyone agreed there's not 51 votes to dismiss it before the managers get to call their case, said Lindsey Graham, told Fox News after huddling with other top Republican senators and White House officials. The idea you would dismiss a trial before they presented the cases is a non-starter. You're not going to get a motion to dismiss. It still remains possible that the House Intelligence Committee could schedule more hearings, although no additional hearings are expected during Thanksgiving week, or the committee could prepare a report on its findings for the House Judiciary Committee, which would have the option of holding its own hearings or simply drafting articles of impeachment outright. Under the resolution passed by House Democrats on the Rules Committee this past October, Trump and the White House potentially would have more rights to defend themselves in Judiciary Committee hearings. For example, attorneys for the president could participate in such hearings, but in a bid for leverage, Chairman Gerald Nadler would be allowed under the rules to deny specific requests by Trump representatives if the White House continued refusing to provide documents or witnesses sought by the Democratic investigators. The possible timetable for impeachment has been unclear. It's generally thought the Judiciary Committee may hold a markup in which it writes articles of impeachment in mid-December. If that were to happen, it's possible the full House could vote on articles of impeachment sometime close to Christmas. That would be a similar time frame to the impeachment of former President Bill Clinton. The House impeached Clinton before Christmas in 1998. The Senate began the trial then in January of 1999. However, the House theoretically could pass articles of impeachment, but delay a vote to send them to the Senate for consideration, perhaps to delay handing Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell control over the proceedings. Graham, coming out of the White House discussions, added, "We didn't talk about how to mount a case to defend the president." Instead, Graham said the discussion centered around how you would start the trial. You know, they'll make a request for witnesses, but that would have to be granted by the Senate. I guess that's the way we did it before. My preference is to try to follow the way the Clinton model as much as possible. So there you go. Also, the talk also came up that Democrats might just say, well, let's just censure the president. That would be interesting.
Yeah.
It got worse for them across the board. I'm looking for the first. TheHill.com does it a lot of times. I'm looking for the first vote count. If we hear nothing about a vote count,
right,
be worried.
Yeah, because
I'm saying Democrats should be worried that they don't have the numbers at that point.
Exactly.
If you don't hear, well, we've polled the Democrats and here.
Well, because the numbers started to come out. A couple of weeks before that vote, last vote.
Yeah, we knew it was.
We knew it was somewhere around 228. 230 something.
Yes.
You know, and so that was indicative that, again, and the Democrats wanted that to get out. There's a reason that, you know, the media has that access and they can start doing that soft head count. Well, if they don't, if it's not there, then you won't hear that head count. If they have the votes, and they're going to go, because if they do, they'll go forward with impeachment. I don't think they do. I believe Adam Schiff's words yesterday, as he closed, indicated that. We've been asking for, throughout this last week and this week, given the nature and how this wasn't bombshell, it was just bomb. It was just bombed altogether. This thing just fell flat. I mean, an embarrassment of an effort. And given that, every day, over and over again, as we witness that over and over again, it was clear that you could tell the confidence was waning. It was the last week, I think, that Nancy was talking about articles of impeachment. Oh, no, we haven't even discussed that yet. Well, it's interesting because the media's play on it was way too over the top hyping. Think about it. I mean, I know they do this anyway. They lie quite a bit. They carry the water for the Democrats, but it just seemed weird how they were covering this as if it were legitimate and as if what they were saying in their coverage were true. But anybody who was following along with critical thinking skills knew that the testimony was not helping.
How many times did you hear this person ties Trump into this?
Yes, right.
And it was hearsay evidence.
Exactly.
How many times did that appear in the mainstream media over the last 2 weeks? Trump is tied. No, he's not. It's hearsay evidence.
Right.
It's double hearsay. It's triple hearsay. And then we got to the point where it wasn't even hearsay anymore. It was just, I think Representative Turner said, it was just made up.
Right.
Just making this up as you go along is what I think. Based on what? You talked to anybody? No, but it's what I thought. So you're making it up.
Right.
Why are you even here?
Right.
So look, it all comes down to we had the polling before. We read it before. I think it's the Emerson poll that shows everything has reversed in the last 4 weeks for independents. That the Emerson poll showed that it was, close to, of course, the poll's going to be the last piece of paper that I have here, correct?
As it always is.
But
a huge swing with independents.
Huge swing. In fact, it's roughly 15 percentage points against, and it was reversed just a couple of weeks ago. And that's independents. And again, when you're looking at 31 districts that went for Trump that Democrats control and 35 to 40 that are in play next year, that's huge. Here it is. It's the Emerson poll. In October, 48% of independents supported impeaching Trump, 39% in opposition. Now, 49% of independents oppose it, while only 34 support it. 15 percentage points in those 14 points, excuse me, from those that supported impeaching Trump to now.
Right.
14 point difference. That's huge.
Yeah, it is.
And 39% were opposed to it. Now 49% are. So basically a reversal completely.
Well, it's again, and I'm sure they see this. Who knows what their internals show, but it's probably much of the same. And their internals probably go into those 35 or so districts.
A month ago, was it AOC who said it? Who said it? We'd be willing to give up the House in order to remove Trump, to impeach Trump. Remember a few people said that?
I don't know if it was AOC, but yeah, I do remember
Somebody said that, and that's the question now. Are they willing to get... Now, after we have heard this testimony, which wasn't really testimony.
Right.
Now that we've heard the witness testimony that wasn't witness testimony, nothing is as it seems with Democrats, is it? But... Do they actually, now that they're worried about do they have the votes, do they actually believe it's worth losing the House to just impeach the president and not remove him from office?
Right.
They said a month ago it was. You had Democrats saying it was. Do they believe it now?
Right. Do they?
866-90-RED-EYE.
Many farmers report having trouble finding workers for their farm operations, but even so, the latest Agriculture Department labor report says at least during the week of October 6th through the 12th, farm operators hired directly 809,000 workers. That's 3% more than the same week in 2018. Paid those workers an average wage 4% more than the same time last year at $15.02 an hour. Those hired workers put in more time on the job, too, during the October reference week compared to last year, 2% more at an average 42 and a half hours. Looking at the entire year, the all hired worker annual average gross wage rate, and that is not easy to say. Anyway, for that, for 2019, it's $14.91 an hour, 5% more than for 2018. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Washington.
The USDA report is brought to you by Cenex Roadmaster XL Premium Highway Diesel Fuel.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
Hey, it's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carly. I'm Gary Mack. Marhead asked this question. Did it seem yesterday that the last day of the testimony somehow was an opportunity to bring up other issues totally unrelated? For example, and Adam Schiff promoted this, one of the major things he promoted yesterday on his Twitter page. Some of Trump's defenders have accused Lieutenant Colonel Vidman, a Purple Heart recipient, of disloyalty to the country. I asked Dr. Hill, a fellow immigrant, her response to those attacks. Quote, this is a country of immigrants. This is what, for me, really does make America great. What does that have to do with impeachment?
Right.
Nothing.
Nothing. Here's your forecast.
Weather from the west that we've been following this week now marching toward the east. We'll continue to see the snow showers in the central Rockies extend into portions of the northern desert southwest. That rainfall providing some flash flooding for portions of Arizona and New Mexico, now into northern Texas, where we could even see a little bit of icing and some snowfall, especially for portions of western Oklahoma and western Kansas. That's all due to a low pressure area wrapping in cold air out of the north and then interacting with the frontal boundary producing rain showers now for portions of northern Texas into the Arklatex region right on up in through the Midwest. Expect rain pushing eastward throughout the day today for Little Rock along I-30, portions of I-44 in Missouri, and I-55. The system moves slowly east and will be in the deep south by the weekend. Your national forecast from Red Eye Radio, I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Bonus show.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. 866-90-RED-EYE. Okay. This is our audio cut of the last 2 weeks.
All right.
and I call it the last 2 weeks because, and I think you and I agreed on this yesterday because this was from day four of the hearings, which was Wednesday. And I think we both agreed that this basically sums up the witnesses, the so-called, everything is so-called. A whistleblower isn't a whistleblower. A witness truly isn't a witness.
Right, exactly.
And I think this really encapsulates the last 2 weeks. And this is Representative Mike Turner with Ambassador Sondland. And this is from day four.
What about the aid? He says that they weren't tied, that the aid was not tied.
And I didn't say they were conclusively tied either. I said I was presuming it.
Okay. And so the president never told you they were tied. So your testimony, his testimony is consistent, and the president did not tie aid to investigations.
That's correct.
Okay. He also testified that he spoke to Giuliani and that Giuliani did not relate that he was tying on behalf of the president or on the president's behalf aid. And then, in fact, Giuliani never said to him that aid was tied to investigations. Now, the question I have for you is, did you ever have a conversation with Giuliani that did not involve Volcker? Because your testimony is a lot of we's and us's. So do you and Giuliani have a separate conference, separate phone call where Giuliani told you that the aid was tied? Because Volcker says, and if he was on all your phone calls, Volcker says that never happened.
No, I did have a few conversations. I don't recall how many because I don't have the records with Mr. Giuliani directly when Mr. Volcker wasn't available. I don't believe I testified that Mr. Giuliani told me that aid was tied.
Oh, I think, see, this is part of the problem, Ambassador Sondland, and I just want to walk you through this, is you've said to us everyone was in the loop, and everyone knew. Now, hold a second. I've listened to you today, as a lot of people, and not only are your answers somewhat circular, frequently you've contradicted yourself in your own answer. Now, the text messages and emails that you put up there, Kurt Volcker walked us through, and he has a completely different understanding of what you were saying than what you're saying you were saying. So I'm a little confused as to how everyone's in the loop, because if Giuliani didn't give you any express statement, then it can't be that you believe this from Giuliani. Now, let me tell you right now, because is Donald Trump your friend?
No, we're not friends.
Okay. Do you like the president?
Yes.
Okay. Well, you know, after you testified, Chairman Schiff ran out and gave a press conference and said he gets to impeach the president of the United States because of your testimony. And if you pull up CNN today, right now, their banner says Sondland ties Trump to withholding aid. Is that your testimony today, Ambassador Sondland, that you have evidence that Donald Trump tied the investigations to the aid? Because I don't think you're saying that.
I've said repeatedly, Congressman. I was presuming. I also said that President Trump.
So no one told you. Not just the president. Giuliani didn't tell you. Mulvaney didn't tell you. Nobody. Pompeo didn't tell you. Nobody else on this planet told you that Donald Trump was tying aid to these investigations. Is that correct?
I think I already testified.
No, answer the question. Is it correct? No one on this planet told you that Donald Trump was tying this aid to the investigations. Because if your answer is yes, then the chairman's wrong and the headline on CNN is wrong. No one on this planet told you that President Trump was tying aid to investigations. Yes or no?
Yes.
So, you really have no testimony today that ties President Trump to a scheme to withhold aid from Ukraine in exchange for these investigations?
Other than my own presumption.
Which is nothing. I mean, that's what I don't understand. So you know what hearsay evidence is, Ambassador? Hearsay is when I testify what someone else told me. Do you know what made-up testimony is? Made-up testimony is when I just presume it. I mean, you're just assuming all of these things, and then you're giving them the evidence that they're running out and doing press conferences, and CNN's headline is saying that you're saying the President of the United States should be impeached because he tied aid to investigations, and you don't know that.
Like I said, that's why this is the audio cut, because this is what it was for 2 weeks.
I mean, it's people who don't know. It's people who don't know. And it's interesting, too, because, you know, they had the whistleblower. They were going to go with the whistleblower. They wanted to disguise the voice to protect the identity of the whistleblower. Oh, no, we're not going to go with that. We're just going to stick to the transcript. That's what the chairman said. We'll just stick to that and the witness testimony. Well, the witness testimony was about as flawed as it gets. I mean, they might as well have picked people off the street. Hey, did you read anything about what was going on with Trump and the call with the incoming president of Ukraine in July? Yeah, I think I saw something about that. Great, come on in. We need you to testify.
They could have brought us in.
Just as much credibility. Well, you and I would probably, we would have destroyed the case. We would have made Adam Schiff cry. You know, it's because they tried to, you saw throughout the entire thing, the boasting, the self-promotion that continued yesterday.
Because David Limbaugh.
Yeah, he pointed out on Twitter.
The self-promotion was unbelievable.
Right.
How incredibly great all these people were. I think that worked against America.
And
to look at this now, just for a couple of minutes, over the last 2 weeks, and where's this going to go? Mm. And what hurt the Democrats in this, because this whole process has hurt the Democrats and made the Republicans stronger. I know people, some of you Democrats are screaming us right now, well, bring us, as we said, we've got that for you right there. Mm-hmm. That was all of the witnesses. There was there's no direct email.
No.
There's not an email.
No. Nope.
There's not any direct evidence of anybody talking to the president where the president did any of these things that is being claimed by Adam Schiff. And so things got worse for you as you brought in these people. And I think that one of the things that hurt, and I mentioned that when I talked to my dad the other day, and I think he's been following it, not like we have at all, but he's been following it a little bit, but he saw Vindman's testimony and he went, who is this guy?
Mm-hmm.
Who's this guy who thinks he's something special?
Right.
You know, in as almost if he's the boss. And I think that when all these witnesses come in and you build them up with the false impression that these people are incredible public servants who are all pure against an evil president. I think most people look at this and they understand it's probably a political trial. They know it's not exact, but they do expect that a witness is a witness. Why are you building up a witness to that particular point? Why is a witness? Why are you making a witness sound like God or the mother Mary?
Yeah,
seriously.
Right. Yeah, right.
I mean, what's going on here? What do you, And I think the average person, I think that worked. I know my dad, it worked against him because he said, I saw the beginning of it. And they're talking about this guy. He goes, I just want to know what he knows. Mm-hmm. They're bringing him up as if he's the greatest patriot. I thought Star Spangled Banner was going to start playing. John Philip Sousa songs all over the place, flags waving. He might be. I don't care in this context. All I care is what evidence he has against the president. And we said this a long time ago. One of the problems is one thing America does understand. They may not understand the three branches of government.
Right.
They may not understand basic concept of the Constitution. They may not understand the Electoral College and why it exists. But one thing they do understand, most Americans, just because we've been bombarded all of our lives with it, we have an idea how things should run in a courtroom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we understand the process. We also respect, I think, the due process, you know, that, yes, that someone is afforded. And while, again, this is not a legal setting, it does have the same spirit of due process.
Yes.
And I think that's what you're seeing in the swing in terms of the drop in the number of people that are supporting this. Really, I'm shocked. Now, we made the point, by the way, because somebody, it was a caller, I think, earlier this week or maybe last week, that brought up the the number of people that support it. And we said, well, hold on. Your baseline is 40. Okay, that's the far left or
right,
the left.
Right.
I mean, so 40% is a given because it's Trump. They don't care about due process. They don't care about anything else. If it leads to him no longer being president or hitting him hard and scarring him to where he loses his votes next year and doesn't win re-election, then great. Job done, job well done, in their opinion. So 40 is that baseline. But when you look at what most critical thinkers and I think people who, especially those independents, who have to take a lot into consideration right now, because, look, many of them may have issues with this president. You know, the farm states on the tariffs or a number of things, although You saw that poll in Wisconsin. He's leading everybody on the left, which is great. But they look at this and say, you know what? After Russian collusion, after Mueller, after Kavanaugh, after this, no, it's not going to. This cannot stand. This kind of political behavior can't stand. If they want to go after the president. You know, and by the way, the Post is on a new thing about how much the Secret Service is spending at Mar-a-Lago. And, you know, they're spending like $1,900 a day and blah, 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 blah. And it was a liberal watchdog group that was doing the math and everything else. You know, again, we said that's probably his Achilles heel is his businesses, which, again, they still haven't found anything and they probably won't find anything here. But I think those independents look at it and say, no, we're not going to, if there were something there and you wanted to, you know, you wanted to go at him or after him because of that and it were something real, then we would understand and we would sit back and watch the process.
We said from the beginning, you've got to lay out something that is a very easily understood criminal act and you have to be able to point to it.
Right.
And they've never been able to do it because there isn't one. And I look at with everything that's the IG report coming out, the leak of the IG report. I mean, Trump, I'm assuming he's going to go crazy on social media today on that coming out that an FBI official basically doctored part of the paperwork for the FISA warrant.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that coming out, the fact that you've got Lindsey Graham now looking at Joe Biden. You've got more focus on Biden now. I look at the last 2 weeks and the last 2 weeks ending today. I don't know of one upside for the Democrats. And I'm saying this trying to be as impartial as I can, looking at it based on what the facts are. Do you see an upside?
No.
I don't see any. I see that the Republicans are probably as energized as you can be saying to the point of saying, yeah. Impeach and they're going to go down, let's have a long Senate trial because we control everything now. And they're out of gas.
Yep.
And when they did it, they actually, and that's one thing I'm sure they said, look, we got to be careful because the Democrats owned all of this and they lost.
Yep. Yep.
They owned this the last two weeks. It was all theirs. They had everything. They had total control and they lost. We can't do that.
Yep. And I think right now this is a loser. They know it's a loser. Adam Schiff, I think, gave us an indication in his closing statement yesterday. They know it's a loser.
866-90-RED-EYE.
There's a new Shell Rotella engine oil for gas engines. Shell Rotella Gas Truck is available now. Megan Pino, Shell Rotella Global Brand Manager, tells us what was behind the development and more about the product.
Obviously, Shell Rotella's heritage is heavy-duty engine oil, and that will remain our heritage. And we know that our customers work hard, but they also love to play hard. And many of our customers also own a gasoline-powered pickup truck, SUV, and perhaps as a personal vehicle or as part of the business. We also know that truck owners use their trucks for different purposes than a car, to be able to tow something, whether that's an RV or a boat for fun on the weekend, for, you know, your business, for hauling equipment. So you're doing something different with your truck than you are with a car. And so why use the same motor oil that you would in your car as your truck? There are three viscosity grades, 0W20, 5W20, and 5W30, which covers any gasoline-powered pickup truck or SUV in terms of the manufacturer recommendations.
For more, go to Rotella.com. This engine report is a service of Shell Rotella.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara. It was our colleague and friend of the show, and we're a friend of his show and him, Mark Levin, who said yesterday, Adam Schiff is their Yamamoto.
Yeah.
He has awakened a sleeping giant.
Yeah. More brilliance by Mark Levin, and he's just absolutely right.
Yeah, but that's a okay, boomer.
Yeah.
You only understand that.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.